So, let me see. You know, Hanumanji, his tail keeps growing, you know, so our tail is growing too, you know. With every day, one more topic gets inserted. Previously, we thought that it will be altogether just 7 sessions and will complete if, you know, Arjuna and Krishna, they accomplished whole Bhagavad Gita, probably in a matter of few minutes while standing in the battlefield, we'll cover it in 6 lectures, you know, but no. Now it's 11, God knows what will happen by the time we reach there. Okay.
Dvaita dvaita mahamoha sarvari kshapanakshamaha bhaswaniva jayate ko गणेशो दूतरीयुतः प्रतिभायाः परोल्लासो निशाकर इवापरः दूतीयुक्तः स जयतु बटुकस्ताण्डवान्वितः ॐ शान्तिः शान्तिः शान्तिः.
Before I start, I should remind you that this is a scene sequence, you know, the main topic has been transforming life into spiritual quest. So we are on the 7th session. Previous one was how to calm inner turmoil. In that process, we saw that as a sincere seeker, it is natural that we go through certain stages, and those stages are very well defined. First stage is that we realize that we need improvement in life. That realization comes by knowing that we have certain problems. Once we start looking at our problems, then we realize that there are quite a good number of those problems. It's not just one or two. Had it been the case, then we could have really accomplished. You know, here is the problem, and let's look for a cause, remove the cause, problem will be over. You know, and without that problem, here will be the condition of life. You know? But no, once we start looking at, then we notice that there are quite good number of problems. No, that create this inner unrest. It's not just simple anger and hatred and jealousy. It's not just anger toward a particular person or dislike toward a particular thing. No. But rather, it's much more complex than that. And we start an effort to organize our life, go deep within, and see what is there to be dealt with. Just because we make a decision to help ourselves, automatically things start taking an amazing shape. It's only as long as we don't do anything, things keep growing. Just like in any other aspect of life, not just spirituality, any aspect of life, we can see that as soon as we start paying attention, we begin to notice that this particular tree needs pruning, this particular part of the garden needs little weeding, lawn needs to be cut, has to be trimmed, you know, and roads need to be broomed, you know, some new flower beds to be prepared. Here is what we need to accomplished task by removing certain things, and here is something that we need to add something in order to accomplish something. This is called Yatamana. Yatamana, that's what we did last time. This particular stage is called Yatamana, the stage of making an effort. When we commit ourselves to our self-endeavor and start looking at ourselves and at our surrounding with determination to find what needs to be taken care of, then that stage is called Yatamana. That at that stage, very first thing we accomplish is that is freedom from our own inertia, carelessness. And that is where we realize, in a spiritual context now, let's look at, that we need a healthier and cleaner body. We need to be more energetic. We need to be more flexible. We need to have more strength in our abdominal region, in our lower back. We begin to notice that generally speaking, I seem to be in good health, but lately when I climb stairs, I feel some pain in my knees. That wasn't the case 2-3 years ago. Okay. Therefore, we start looking for solution. That's where yoga asana comes in. We also notice that during our early teenage and adulthood, we could run, we could jump. For hours we could go without taking any food. There was a time when we did not need to carry our water bottle all the time, and still life was just all right. And that means something needs to be taken care of that. It means something is not as great as it used to be. You can see that your lung capacity has declined. You are not able to run as fast and as far a longer period of time as you were used to. That means you need to figure out how to strengthen your lungs, how to strengthen your diaphragm, and how to build more capacity, more endurance. And previously things were already there. You didn't realize that you needed to do anything extra, but now you feel that you need to do something about it, otherwise it will continue declining. Therefore, you added some breathing techniques, relaxation techniques, some concentration techniques. You added some techniques which give you ability to withdraw your mind from your complex lifestyle so that you can fall asleep and have good, nice, sound sleep. Previously, you are able to compare that in your early childhood, adolescence, and adulthood, you could fall asleep like dead log. Now you are turning and tossing. Simple lullaby doesn't help anymore. That means now you need to learn how to sleep properly, how to eat properly, how to walk properly. For a careless person, for a person who is not so vigilant and who is not perceptive, for a long time these things remain unknown to that person, because person is quite happy with his or her inertia, carelessness, negligence. And when such a person becomes aware of these things, because there is no way to avoid seeing such problems, then that person starts simply complaining. Yeah. So whatever little energy is left goes into simply complaining, feeling bad, you know, attributing to someone else outside in the external world. But no, for an alert and awakened person, the effort has started and therefore things start getting better. So that stage is called Yatmana, the very first one. And once we reach a certain state of development, accomplishment, then we notice that out of 50 problems, 20, 30 of them are gone. They were there just because, you know, just like when you do not broom, do not, you know, take care of, you do not vacuum, do not broom, do not clean, do not wipe, do not do dusting. For a long time, things are accumulated. But once you do all this dusting, mopping, cleaning as a part of your daily routine, then it's really not a big thing. Once you have taken care of, you know, this 2-3 years of continuous clutter that was sitting there, and you ventilated, you opened the door and windows, and you did little bit dusting, mopping, then after that, just maintenance. However, that is the time when you notice that certain things are now not going away by applying those simple means. Take another example. On routinely, on daily basis, or let's say quite frequently, you change your clothes, put in the, you know, your dust, you know, in the machine, and you clean it. But certain clothes which you have not changed, and you are wearing again and again, you can see that there are, and certain clothes you have not changed, and also you have been wearing them, using them quite carelessly. Then you notice that there are certain very strong, tough stains. They need extra attention. So similarly here, you have paid attention to a large host of problems. And just because you paid attention and you determined, you made your determination to do something about it, automatically at least 20, 30, 50% just drop away by themselves. However, some of them are tough ones, they don't go away so easily. That's called Vyatireka, the process of isolating tough ones, you know, persistent ones from the simple ones, Mridu. They are called easy to deal with ones. And there are certain ones, they are very tough to deal with. So once you are able to isolate, first you acknowledge that these are the ones hard to deal with. They are not so easily going away. But these are the simple ones. Once you have come to that process, now your job is on one hand less, but requires greater diligence. That is the state, Vyatireka. So it's not just any simple routine of your asana, pranayama, meditation, relaxation can help you. It's not just simple routine of being vegetarian that can help you. It's not just simple routine that you become vegan and that your all life's problems are solved. No. No. All those things are very good, and they did very good job in the early, in beginning stages. Now you need to pay attention to that you are living in northern part of United States of America, where 200 days per year, there is no sun. So you are doing very good job with your diet, but you need extra vitamin D, for example. No? Just by having, let's say, your, God knows, whatever food you eat which has vitamin D, it's no longer enough. Just because one day sun was shining, and you put on your all clothes and only nose, you know, the tip of your nose is exposed to the sun, and you expect that just because you are in the sun, your all vitamin D needs are complete, done, fulfilled. No, it doesn't work that way. You have caps, you have scarf, your whole body covered, no? You have your mittens and you come out in the sun. On top of that, because of there is so much snow and bright sun, you put on your sunglasses. Then you say, "Hail Mary Mother, my vitamin needs are done." No, sir. You have to pay extra attention. That's called Vyatireka stage. Why such and such asana? Why such and such kind of pranayama? Why such and such kind of diet? Why such and such kind of relaxation technique? You have to know it in order to really move forward, further. Okay. Same thing here in the, when you are dealing with your mind. Here is a habitual way of thinking, talking about same thing again and again and again. Here is attachment, here is desire, here is lack of fulfillment of the desire. From that, here is anger. From there, here is a confused mind. From that confused mind, memory loss. From that memory loss, whole power of discernment is kind of damaged. And then you are just doing things completely abruptly and things are falling apart. Okay? You have started paying attention to this process and you have reached a certain place that, yes, my quite persistent problem is, for example, hatred. Or anger. And it seems that my anger is associated with the kind of people I'm living with. They are the cause of my anger. Yeah. Just example I'm giving you. Start working on it. Your simple sounding, so simple pranayamas, or let's say relaxation, just because you are sitting, you are laying down in crocodile pose and you expect that this strengthening of your breath or strengthening of your diaphragm or your breath awareness that you do in cobra or crocodile pose or with sandbag breathing, you will become master of your mind. That is too much to expect. Then what else to do? Well, that's what the next stages of practices are. That's what person, you know, at individual personal level, you know, interaction begins. Go to talk to somebody who knows that subject. Do some recitation, do some mantra, you know, or let's say start having some unique kind of objects for your concentration and meditation, maybe visualization, things like that. Then you come to another stage, Ekendriya. That's where we had reached last time. That is, one thing is extremely important. Now, out of 50 problems, 30, 40 of them went away right in the very beginning when you started your practice, sadhana. Out of those remaining 10 ones, they also fell away, went away. Now, you are left with only 2, 3, or 5 maximum. They are tough ones. You suddenly lose your temper. Suddenly you fall back to the same very, very old groups. You know it that this is your problem. And you think that you are determined to overcome those problems. And yet, somehow, something flares up inside. You find yourself in the same very old rut. You speak in an inappropriate manner. You interact with yourself, with your friends, with your loved ones in a very inappropriate, harmful, you know, manner, painful manner. And after the whole episode is over, then you feel bad about it. And if you are a good person, you know, vigilant person, then you say, "No, I'm not going to do this thing anymore." But a week later, 10 days later, month later, again you do the same thing. That's called ekendriya, pertaining to one particular issue, pertaining to one particular sensory experience. That is the problem that we are going through. Now, when Bhagavad Gita was written, for some reason, as the verse 64 of chapter 2 tells us. Perhaps Krishna had a reason why he's giving an example of just two things, raga and dvesha, in verse 62 of chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. Raga dvesha viyukta istu vishayan indriya ischaran atmavashyair vidheya atma prasadam adhigacchati. So Krishna is reminding Arjuna that here is how, in verse 62-63, you know, he explained, here is how we lose clarity and transparency of our mind. Our mind becomes contaminated, our mind becomes restless. We constantly, you know, brood on the same subject again and again, and quite often unconsciously, out of habit. The more we think about such things, the more attachment towards such objects of thoughts grow. The more the attachment, the greater the desire. And if desires are fulfilled, you want to repeat them again. If your desires are not fulfilled, then you feel angry and you try to find someone out there the cause of the unfulfillment, and you hold a grudge. You want to wipe out that person, hoping that if that person is no longer there, if that circumstance is no longer there, you know, your desires will be fulfilled. And when it doesn't work out that way, then you feel mad at everybody out there. But you cannot just catch hold of anybody and everybody. There are so many circumstances. People are, people have their, counter arguments. And therefore, ultimately, you hold yourself responsible for that, and you become mad and angry at yourself. Your inability to continue being mad at yourself forces you to become mad at someone at the earliest opportunity available. This is the process. In this, and there are many, many such circumstances, but for some reason Krishna is giving example of raga and dvesha, that it is raga and dvesha that creates this problem. It is very important to remember, when we are reading these scriptures, when we are studying these scriptures and trying to learn something from these scriptures, we have to be very much aware of the context in which that scripture was written. Krishna and Arjuna are standing in the middle of a battlefield. Between Arjuna and his side of the commanders and Arjuna's enemy, cousin brothers, and his side of people and commanders, there had been long-standing raga and dvesha, attachment and hatred. And all other tendencies were kind of anchored in these tendencies. People were brimming with self-righteousness. Both sides were very much in belief that they were right and the other side was wrong. Their attachment to their opinions, their understanding, their viewpoint was extremely strong. That had spread outside the individual's territories, and it had become part of the collective consciousness, and collective consciousness was divided in two parts, one on one side, other on the other side. They both were in complete collision. Every single soldier, every single commander, all the kings and kingdoms who stood in the battlefield, all of them were suffering from some kind of attachment to their party. And that attachment, it is exactly in proportion to their attachment, there was hatred or dislike or inclination of condemnation of the other side. It is in same proportion. So therefore, raga and dvesha, they go together. Now, when we read these scriptures, we have to look at in our context. What is bothering us? What is bothering us to the point that we are not able to overcome it? So by the time, God knows, 1,000 years later, 2,000 years later, 3,000 years later, when Patanjali is writing his book, the Yoga Sutra, he finds violence to be the main force. Quite constant, quite consistently, Patanjali is giving example of violence or violent tendencies to be the cause of inner unrest. When he introduced Ashtanga Yoga, Yamas, Niyamas, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi in Sutra 228, then very soon, by 33, he is explaining Vitarka Badhane Pratipaksha Bhavanam, when he was talking about Yamas and Niyamas. What causes us to run away from the principles of non-violence, truthfulness, non-stealing? What causes us to become caught in the whirlpool of our own inner tendencies? He said, vitarkaha, the tendencies which just completely confuse our mind, vitarka, where any kind of tendency or any matter which becomes a victim of discussion, which is full of contradictions. So there are times in our life when arguments are thrown from both sides and we are just caught in it. We are not able to decide which particular side is really great. Arguments from both sides is somewhat quite strong. And it is here in our own personal life. I'm talking about our own inner dialogue. In fact, people think that through dialogue we can really come to some solution, resolution. So far it had not worked. Neither it had worked, it has worked in people's individual lives, not it has worked in people's political life or international life. Sometimes 10 years, 20 years, 50 years go by and the great, great experts in conflict resolution, they continue offering their services and conflict never comes to an end. Because counter arguments are going back and forth, back and forth. And none of the parties are really ready to agree with anybody's proposal. Similarly, here in our own mind, a conflicting thought comes. And there are two voices, totally opposite to each other, supporting these different, conflicting thoughts, ideas. Such thoughts are called vitaraka, where we just go on throwing arguments. As long as there is an argumentative mind, there is no peace. Now, Patanjali says that that is the reason, but it is extremely subtle. Normally we think that no, this is a reality. Somebody is attacking me and I'm trying to defend myself. I'm quite a straightforward, simple person. People don't understand me. It is their problem. And as soon as we are reminded that people are not really that complex, rather you have a complex mind, immediately we go blizzard. Now, this is extremely subtle thing. Patanjali is making a very clear point. Vitarkaha hinsadayaha, hinsa. Any tendency that pains you, that gives you pain, in one way or other, has an argumentative, cluttered mind at its source. So just look at what is there that gives you the most pain. What is there that compels you to give pain to others? What do you find so painful for yourself? What kind of thoughts, what kind of discussion, what kind of environment, what kind of interaction is very painful to you? And your inability to manage that pain, you react in a harmful manner. Try to just look at that. Keep your violent tendency and its association with pain. That will tell you that that is your main vitaraka. That is where your mind is stuck. And throwing arguments and counter arguments, you know, back and forth. And you are not able to rise above it. A simpler example can be given. You go to a counselor, you go to a therapist, you go to a teacher. Although if you have a kind of clear, calm, tranquil, and somewhat sane mind, probably you will not go to a counselor, therapist, and teacher. You will not feel a need for going there. But yes, there are times when we go to teacher, we are not really that insane. We are in relatively good shape. We are looking for guidance. And here in the context of Yoga Sutra, Bhagavad Gita, definitely we are talking about those of us who are, in relative terms, those you know, who are in very good shape of mind. We are not really in that bad place. So, when a scripture, when a lecture, when a teacher, and the advices coming from from the teacher, scripture, book, friends, your loved ones, make you upset. Remember that this is a problem with deep roots. Your conscience tells you that what your loved ones are telling makes very much sense, and you wish that that kind of things were not told to you. You know that your friend, your loved ones, your teacher, your priest, your counselor, your therapist, is right, telling you the right thing. Your conscience is very much aware of it. And yet, thought flashed in your mind that he did not understand you. He doesn't understand you very well. Somebody tells you, here for example, hatred, jealousy, anger, attitude of repelling or being repelled. Is right or wrong is not the point here, but the point is that it contaminates your mind. It hurts you. It pushes you backward. It stops your growth. Therefore, rise above this issue instead of wasting your time in justifying that you are right, another person is wrong, and a person, a teacher, a scripture, a book, a counselor who is reminding you about this truth is not able to understand you well. You are right, another person is wrong. And the person who is trying to help you has not understood you well. This is an argument that comes from deep inside us. If that is the case, then that means that particular negative tendency of mind is very, very, very deeply rooted somewhere in the field of, you know, long, long, you know, cherished afflictions, avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, ignorance, false sense of self-identification, attachment, aversion, and fear. Well, sir, even this much I understand quite well. My problem is I don't know what to do about it. Then that's when Sutra 233 comes of the Yoga Sutra. Vitarka Vadhani Pratipaksha Bhavanam. You know how your anger is hurting you. Your hatred is hurting you. Your attachment to certain things, certain objects, certain people hurting you. You know that how your judgmental mind is creating such a profound unrest in you. You also know that you have been working very hard to overcome this tendency. You also know that you have good people around you, loved ones around you. They have all good intention to help you, but you have been constantly and consistently rejecting their help you are constantly and consistently rejecting their advice, because the pain created by the realization that the cause of your inner unrest is somewhere deep inside you is so painful, so intense, that living with that pain seems to be somewhat easier than getting to the bottom of, getting to the cause of that pain. It's like sometimes the thorn has gone so deep, that's why it's called abhinivesha. It is, abhi means so, from in every regard, in every respect, ni means completely, vesha. That affliction has gone so deep and so well, so methodically deep inside us, that this thorn-like, that affliction, when is about to be pulled out, it's very painful. Even when somebody is telling you that, see, there is actually a thorn here, and this thorn is somewhat little bit poisonous, or, you know, it's rotting inside and it has become infected. And you say, no, I don't have such problem. Because you know that in order to remove this thorn, which is almost rotting, you know, underneath the skin, in order to remove it, perhaps there will be some disruption. It will be some of the doctor has to, you know, make a cut to reach there, and that will be painful. So you are avoiding the pain of anticipated pain that is involved in the removal of the cause of the pain. So this anticipated pain is more intense. Even though it's short-lived, this pain of removing the thorn is short-lived pain, and in long run, it will give you freedom from the pain completely, and yet there is resistance. Okay. When you notice this kind of tendency, know that this is a quite deep-rooted problem. How to do it? That's what Yoga Sutra 233 tells us. Vitarka badhane pratipaksha bhavanam. Try to see what is just completely opposite to, contrary to the problem that you are experiencing, that which you are finding as an obstacle in your growth. Is it hatred? Then try to figure out how to cultivate love, and cultivate both quantitatively and qualitatively, so strong, so big, that it can outweigh, it can nullify the hatred. You have been accustomed to identifying yourself in a particular way for a long period of time. You have been ruler of your company that you established. You had been achiever. For past 20, 30 years, you never failed. You succeeded. You identified yourself with that success. Once in a while, if anybody challenged you, you just removed that person from your path. That added another layer of self-identification as a successful person, powerful person. Now, there comes a time when you suddenly you find yourself standing somewhere where you find yourself much smaller than the person who is standing next to you. Like a camel, you thought that you are the tallest creature in the world. And one day, when you happen to be next to a mountain, then you realize that you are a very small creature. That's very painful. Okay? Very painful. So this particular type of pain is arising from your attachment. Attachment has its source in self-identification. You are a big shot. In developing countries, there is a word called self-made man. In America, our culture here in the United States of America teaches that you become a self-made person. I hear that even Warren Buffett has not given all this money to his son. I think his name is David, probably. Culture tells us that you become independently healthy, wealthy, strong, determined person. But in many other countries, somebody starts from this lower level and keeps building, and is very proud of himself. Media constantly says that this fellow was just a chai maker, as though if chai maker doesn't have and should not have upward mobility. Whereas here, upward mobility and right, or let's say opportunity to experience the upward mobility, is part of American psyche. And when that is not there, feels very bad. When it is there, you feel good, but good only to the point that you find it as a common phenomena. It's not that it completely puts you in an entirely different category and you are no longer human being. In many other countries, you are no longer human being, you are almost like God. You know? And when that image somehow falls apart, it's extremely painful. In American culture, Western culture, there might be some similar other example which I may not be fully aware of. So you can just think of, you can just go and find that example on your own in order to explain this phenomena and apply this particular principle unto yourself. So vitarka badhane, something is bothering you. Here, things are falling apart. Something went wrong. For last 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, you have been trying your best. Things are not working out. Same very people, those who used to adore you, slowly start going away from you. And one day you bump into your own juniors, whom you had one day given employment. Same very people say, hey, hi, how are you? How are things going? And you hear a sarcastic remark in that may be a simple statement. That person may be genuinely asking, how are you doing and how are things going? But what you hear deep inside your own ears, inside your own mind, is sarcastic remark. Person is trying to humiliate you. You know, that's how you feel. So this is example you can just choose. You just find that what is there that hurts you the most. And see its association with the image that is shattered, and you are feeling that hurt. And you are hurting to the point that you want to retaliate, you want to resist, you want to teach lesson, but somehow you are not in the position anymore to teach lesson to anybody. Either you are old, either you have lost money, or you have lost your power, you have lost your social reputation. No. Whatever the reason. But the thing is, you are no longer able to do what you used to do so easily. And you had identified yourself with that. Now if that is the case, you will see, yes. You suddenly, just as the moment somebody, you know, tells you, you should have done this. Even somebody asks a question, Did you do such and such thing? Immediately you flare up and you are not able to control your speech. And you are not able to control your action. It's just boop. What do you mean? You know, that means something is, your identification has been so strong that even if somebody raises finger at that identification, you feel horrible, bad. No? And immediately like a, what do you call that? That turtle snapping, what do you call that? Snapping turtle. No? You want to snap. Okay. That means that is very, very well established vitarka. It's bothering you. You might be fooling yourself that it doesn't bother you, but you can't fool yourself when there is an external trigger point. At that trigger point is so easily just triggers and you lose yourself. And when you come back to relatively a normal place in your mind, then better you reflect, look back. Why was I so quick to react that way? It means deep down the unrest was so profound that restless mind was really waiting for an opportunity, praying for an opportunity to tell you that this is my problem. How do you manage it? Pratipaksha bhavanam. If strong identification is the cause, then humility is the way. It's extremely, if you are not fully prepared to really get out of, you know, find a cure and move forward, then humility is the most difficult thing to have. When asmita, the stronger the asmita, more distorted the asmita, more afflicting the asmita, harder it is to be humble. And in order to pretend that you are a humble person, you put enormous pressure on your mind. It's like a huge mountain you are carrying on your shoulder. Huge mountain, and it's very tiring. It's very tiring to have fake humility. Okay? Very, very tiring. Okay, it's a burden, gigantic burden. But that is what you need to do, to have in order to nullify, you know, the vitarka, the pain, and anger, and everything else that goes with it, you know, with that self-identification. You are a big shot. And it might be not from even this, from this lifetime, this asmita that you are associating with. It may be from previous lifetime. As a king, as a noble, as a ruler, as a rich man, as a very, very learned pundit, a scholar, as a scientist. You identified yourself with that kind of image for your whole life. You died. Body got buried, cremated, turned to dust, ash, or turned into organic compost, whatever. But the mind did not let that identification go. And when that mind and the soul again descends into new body as it goes through the cycle of rebirth, it again starts showing up this tendency. Okay? Starts showing up this tendency. And you have to be very careful. So vitarka vadhani pratipaksha bhavanam. By the time Patanjali is there in 2nd century BC, there was lots of pent-up anger. People at individual level, people at the level of their society, community, nation, kingdom were engaged in very, very, very deep, profound violence caused by, promoted by centuries old anger. There are only two societies, two sides of the society. One that is oppressor, other that is oppressed. Oppressors fought among each other to expand their oppression. That is a time when you look at, it's very amazing. Hardly they were rulers. Rather they were, all the rulers in those days were quite often raiders, looters, mindless killers. And that is the case throughout India, China, Greece. So they fought among each other. Whether is it Ashoka the Great in India, or whether it's Alexander the Great in Western world, all of them were just looters and raiders. There was no sense of ruling a kingdom for the sake of putting kingdom on the track of growth and development, peace and harmony. Okay? And who was suffering? Of course, oppressors were suffering too, because they used to fight among each other. And yet, their suffering was originating from something else, whereas there was another large group of people. They were who were the oppressed ones. Oppressed ones don't have vice. And yet, they were drowning in very, very deep anger. And anger was getting more and more intense every day because they did not have any let out. Anger always tries. Anger is an explosive thing. It always results into violence. But when the oppression is so deep that the anger is not being expressed, so it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it starts, you know, expressing in smaller circles, in the family, among two individuals, between, and the anger finds, so only at that time, our own loved ones become victim of our anger. Because we cannot express our anger toward those whom we are angry at. So who becomes the victim of our anger? Our loved ones. Wife is angry at husband. Husband is angry at wife. Children are angry at father, mother. They are angry at their parents. That is, fellow, he has become old, doesn't understand. All day long, he just sits outside at the home and he keeps giving us instructions. Why is he not dying? No. And then that anger spills a little bit outside the home to the next door, never. No, that's why Jesus Christ, there was a reason why he said, love thy neighbor as thyself. Because that was the only way at that time for people to release some of their steam. No? Okay? So that was the time when Patanjali was born and he was writing the Yoga Sutra. And therefore he gives that example. And among all top, so there are so many whole long list of causes that create inner unrest. And Patanjali is speaking of just violence, antidote to violence is friendship. Okay. Consider them to be your own. Have friendly attitude. Is it really possible that you are angry at somebody and you are trying to practice friendship with that fellow? That's the hardest thing you can ever imagine, but that's the only thing that will work. No? So bitarka vadhani pratipaksha bhavanam. How much should you apply this kind of antidote? I have 20 pounds of hatred. Let me go and earn 30 plus few more pounds of love. and put these together. Let my 35 pounds of love defeat this little guy called the guy which is only 30 pounds of hatred. Still, I will be 5 pounds in plus. Okay? Not that easy. But this is what here Patanjali says in Sutra 34 of chapter 2. You have to look at the intensity of the problem, negative tendency, the size of the negative tendency. You have to look at the exact trigger point of that tendency. Then apply that antidote, which is both qualitatively bigger, quantitatively bigger, and exactly at that time. So for a long time, I had a problem of hunger. And I used to get hungry around 10 o'clock in the night. 6-7 o'clock evening dinner was the most painful thing for me. And it had been my habit, or let's say my weakness, that I had extremely very, very little tolerance to hunger. So I was given the instruction here that I should eat in the evening and not eat anything after 7. It was very, very difficult. It may be unimaginable for you that for such a small little reason you will lie, you will, you know, kind of try to bluff. But I did it. And to who? To one who I loved the most, respected the most, that is Swamiji. Okay? So he caught me many, many times. And he gave me strict order not to eat. So I said, no, I'm not going. This is my very bad habit. I'm not going to eat after 7 o'clock. Well, 10 o'clock, I made nice tilak for everyone. And that's when and Swamiji was there in residence, and he had some guests. And so when I served the chai, you know, the tilak, chai in milk, so he asked, bring the halwa I have made. Problem was, I was making his so-called chai exactly, precisely around 10:15 in the night. That was the time of peak period of my hunger. I knew that I should not eat, but I couldn't resist. So here is the stove making my tea. There was a person here, Wendy Hoffman. I requested her to stand right here between myself and Swamiji. Swamiji is sitting there. I asked her to stand here. I am standing here, stirring, and with my right hand, time to time, open the fridge, gently take the halwa. He was watching TV, so put the halwa in my mouth, Indian sweet. Just swallow it. I didn't realize I already reached the last piece of halwa. I felt that this is last, and yet I couldn't control myself. I took the last one. And when everything was done, I served the chai. Then he said, bring the halwa. I said, which halwa, Swamiji? Okay. So, reason I'm telling, the trigger point. So, he said, well, no, one I made this afternoon. I said, Swamiji, there's no halwa in it. So finally, I made it. It was sitting there. I said, are you talking about that halwa which has been sitting here for a long time? We just cleaned it. He said, come here. We cleaned it or you cleaned it? I felt very bad. But however, that day, here, see here, another important thing he did. Very lovingly, he said, beta, I've been torturing you for such a long time. May God bless you. You can eat anything, anytime. It really doesn't matter. Suddenly, my bad behavior went away. Okay? See here, it is in his mind, he's replacing, you know, my bad tendency with positive ones. Here is my resistance and here is his willingness. You know? Here is my denial and here is his acceptance. Boom, gone. However, it was only partial freedom from my this behavior. Still, however, if let's say if I am hungry, I was hungry, which is few people are here in the audience sitting, they know that if right before my lunch, before my food, if somebody is asking too many questions related to food, that is the explosive moment. Boom, the plate flies, you know, everywhere. And poor Aradhana was quite often the person who cleaned my mess. That continued for a long time. So see here, overall I know, and I'm quite sure that I know correctly myself, overall I'm a good person. But that was one problem right there. Thank God, with some effort of Vyatireka, Ekendriya, slowly that went away. And I'm really telling you, I have become quite a good person now. You know? Yeah. The amount of peace I have lately is far more than when I was younger, because that tendency is gone. Other tendency could be. Another example I'll give you. Once there was a fight between me and a postman here in America. That was somehow resolved, and it did not appear to be a big issue, but somehow, of course, there was no issue with the postman, but there was issue with something deeper than that postman. But it became very clear 5 years later, 1985 or 86, I think something like 87. I think it was 87. In Rishikesh, under some unique circumstance, again I had very big fight, an ugly one. A fight, it wasn't fight, but because the postman, you know, was not really fighting at all. It was my own behavior that forced me to speak one unkind word, inappropriate, insultful word. Swamiji heard about it, but he did not tell me that he heard anything, and it became very, very, very big mess, which later on I learned that Swamiji went and requested the postmaster in the post office where this postman worked that please file a formal case against Ashram and against Swamiji for being rude to the postman. Postmaster was shocked. Swamiji, why are you doing that? He said, no, please, you will do a great favor to me. And take me to court. So case was filed in Dehradun. Swamiji had to go and appear. Came back one night, very upset, very disturbed. Walked in, and there were around 30, 40 people from the West. They were, you know, studying with Swamiji at that time, and Dale Colton had taken that group. He called me. Everybody was sitting in the library. That was in those days the main meeting area. Swamiji was there. I came in. He said, what did you say to that postman? I exactly knew what I had said. And yet, I wished I did not know. So I said, nothing, Swamiji. What did I say? So, no, tell me exactly why is this mess? Try to recall, try to remember what did you say, what you said. I exactly knew, it was very clear to me, and yet I did not want to acknowledge and confess. He kept asking. And finally, he got up very upset. He had some newspapers, things where this whole court case was even had gone into the media. And he looked at me and then looked at all those 30, 40 people sitting there, and all of them were my friends and my students. And he said, and he Swamiji finally said, "You people, you think that this stupid fellow standing before me is Panditji, your teacher, spiritual teacher. He's disgrace to my tradition. Constant liar, a liar, egotistical person." And then he repeated the exact sentence which I had three months earlier I had sent to that postman. And he just walked out. And when he was walking out and just about to close the door, he said, "What's the point being alive? I'm alive just for you people, and here I'm stuck with such idiots and hypocrites, liars. It's better to cast off the body and disappear in the mountains." Then that's when it's like electric shock. And then that's when he banged the door, closed it, and he walked away in his room. Whole night I couldn't sleep. Then I immediately it became very clear that being proven, in front of my own friends and students, those who really treat me as a spiritual person, wise person, they have a certain degree of respect which stands on their faith and trust in me, and I have been enjoying that faith and trust. And I did not want that image to be destroyed. Look at identification. I am a spiritual person. How can ever I, talk nonsense to anybody? It was just very painful. Whole night. Millions of thoughts were coursing through my mind. Around 4 in the morning, he sent somebody, "Go and get Panditji." When I came, he was just sitting on his small bed right on the floor. Very kind, very peaceful. And when I came, I put my head in his lap. It's like he himself, the pain he had whole night was far more, million times more intense than the pain I had. And he said, "Beta, anytime I scold you, I feel horrible. I do not know how I will face my master. No, I hurt you so much." It's like, look at the antidote. Here is my problem, such so tough one. Here is my arrogance stemming from my self-identification, distorted sense of self-identity, which I did not want to get rid of. I was hiding it deep inside, which I did not want to be exposed. Here all this thing happened, and here is the antidote, total antidote. And then that was it. Okay. So the point is here, in order to find that peaceful state, in order to cultivate that clarity of mind, tranquil state of mind on which the entire happiness depends, it's important to find what is my main problem. How to find an antidote for it? Gather courage and strength to use that antidote. Attain freedom. Then from thereafter, automatically comes. Thereafter, there is no need to really do anything much more. Automatically comes vasikara. Your thought, speech, and actions are always vasikarana. Vasi means they are in your control. You become master of your mind and everything that is done with the mind, through mind, speech, thought, speech, action, everything. Master of the mind is the master of our thought, speech, and action. And that mind automatically becomes our guru, our guide, our protector, our provider, and we continue moving on that path. Thank you. God bless you.